May it please the court. Your Honors, the issue in this case is the constitutionality of 538225, which is the medical malpractice affidavit of merit statute. There are three issues I would like to focus on during my time this morning. The first is the relevance of the Mahoney case. The second issue is clarification and explanation of our specific challenge to the statute in this case. And I briefly would like to address standing, which has been raised by the respondent. The first issue, the Mahoney case. The Mahoney case was decided, I believe, in 91 by this court, and it held the version of 538225, which was in effect at that time, was constitutional. The challenge in Mahoney was a broad, general challenge to the legislature's general ability to enact an affidavit of merit requirement in this state. There wasn't any specific challenge to any of the specific requirements of the statute. It was, can the legislature do that? Can they make you file an affidavit at the beginning of a case? And the Mahoney court said, yes, the legislature can do that. It's our position that the Mahoney case is not controlling and frankly, is irrelevant to the issue in this case. I am not claiming that the legislature cannot enact a requirement that an affidavit be filed at the outset of a medical malpractice case. What we are claiming, and this brings me to my second point, is specific with regard to the requirements of the statute in effect now, and specifically the definition of legally qualified healthcare provider and the fact that you have to have standard of care and causation opinion from that definition of a legally qualified healthcare provider, which ties the legally qualified healthcare provider, i.e. the expert, to the same profession and the same specialty as the defendant. And there are two major problems with that. The first one is, and this has been noted by this court in the Klotz case, which isn't that too far back, that the standard for the affidavit is different and oftentimes is much more narrow than the standard that you can use for an expert at trial. So at trial, you may be able to, if you've got a case against a family practice doctor who fails to diagnose cancer, at trial, you can have causation addressed by an oncologist. But in the beginning, at the outset of the case, you cannot. You have to have a family practice doctor. You have to seek out a family practice doctor who can...
Can you raise this issue if it doesn't affect you?
Yes. I think that goes to the issue of standing. And the standing issue is it does affect us. It does affect my client, first off, because her case was dismissed. And second off, this case involves complex causation issues. And cholecystectomy is the surgery that was performed which started the problems for my client. She had, which is a gallbladder removal. She had her gallbladder removed, hepatic duct was nicked, and she had complications beyond that. And the main problem for us is that she has continuing, lingering, permanent, what we think is permanent, problems from this. And a general surgeon, and the statute says that you've got to have opinions.
How do we know what a general surgeon could state? Opposing counsel says that general surgeons do this surgery, understand the side effects and the risks, and can testify to it. You say they can't, but you haven't presented an affidavit of any kind of expert at all, even out in a different profession, to say that the defendant was negligent and it caused the injuries, and I'm the only kind of doctor who can testify to that. Why do we take your word for it that you're affected by this when you haven't offered anything to show you can get any kind of affidavit?
Well, and that gets to the standing issue, so I'll move
to
that.
Well, that gets to whether or not you've proved a problem here, because you're saying that, but I don't see anything in the record. I just see your argument. Don't you have to do something in the record?
I would say no, and not only do I not have to, I would say I can't, because in order for me to, number one, file an affidavit that I know doesn't comply, in other words, an affidavit from a hepatologist that I know doesn't comply with the statute, I can't do that. And
well,
if I
you could present testimony from doctors supporting what you're alleging, but
on I would
this
get
record,
in,
we only have allegations. We have no evidence to support your allegations.
Well, I would have to, in order to prove the negative, I would have to both get into work product and attorney-client information to establish. In other words, instead of filing an affidavit that isn't compliant, if I filed an affidavit saying, I tried, but I was denied, well, that's my work product. I am then telling the other side of the case.
But you're asking us to take your allegation you couldn't get one on face value and it can't be opposed, so there's nothing in the record to support that.
I don't think you the statute, if the statute is written in an unconstitutional fashion.
But that, my point is, I understand what your point. But you're saying it's written so narrowly that you couldn't get someone to testify because sometimes it has to be someone in another profession or with another specialty. But you're just saying that. How do we know that doctors, in fact, can't do it when there's no medical testimony to support your allegation?
Well, I think that's another problem with the statute, is how would I prove that other than waiving work product and attorney-client privilege? But I don't think it's even necessary, because what this court does know is that the standard is different than the standard at trial. There's no question about that, because this court has acknowledged that in the Klotz case, that it's different. It's entirely different what you have to show in the beginning through an affidavit than what you may be able to use at trial. And that in and of itself,
I think. Can you further address the standing issue as to why, assuming that's true and assuming that's a problem for it, why we address that in this case, where you haven't offered an affidavit that would be admissible at trial but is not under the statute?
Because I don't think I think it's almost impossible for anyone to get the issue of the constitutionality of this statute.
Well, that would get it if you had that affidavit.
What type of affidavit, Your Honor?
One from a doctor who the trial court excluded because they weren't in the same profession or specialty, but testified to causation and so forth.
The problem with that is, Your Honor, the statute itself says if you file an affidavit, they have a process where they can challenge it, and then the trial court looks at it and says, oh, no, this doesn't comply. The statute specifically says if you file an affidavit that turns out to be noncompliant, the plaintiff owes the defendant its attorney's fees in challenging that statute. So there is significant repercussions for my client to file what is ultimately deemed a noncompliant affidavit, because she's going to owe the defense attorney's fees once it's determined noncompliant. So the only way to get it up in front of this court is a situation like this, where the case is dismissed because we didn't file an affidavit, and then the court examines whether or not the statute is constitutional.
Can you distinguish the Spradling case, where we allowed a radiologist to be an affiant in a medical malpractice action against a neurosurgeon, and we said they didn't have to be the exact same specialty?
Absolutely, Judge. The Spradling case, first off, was an issue of interpretation, and the court said that practicing this, I believe it was the same or similar specialty, does not require the same board certification. But the Spradling court also made very clear that in order to go outside of the specialty, the doctor in question has to routinely perform the procedure in question. Mm-hmm. There are all sorts of scenarios where you might have a case where the causation issues, and keep in mind, this all really comes down to the causation opinions. It's not a problem in standard of care. But in causation, it gets so far beyond the issues that the defendant might be have expertise in, that just because of this broad interpretation of same specialty doesn't solve the problem. For example, in this case, through our work, without exposing work client, hepatologists do not often perform gallbladder removals, at least the ones that can talk about the specific causation issues that we have. And more, even on its face, if you have a case against a nurse or an LPN or a CNA for giving someone the wrong medicine, and giving the wrong medicine causes severe harm to that patient, it's impossible to find an LPN who can talk about the causation issues if there are any sort of question about whether or not the damage is permanent, whether or not the damage specifically came from that or something else.
Just to find for you, do we have to find that the affidavit requires a doctor to talk about causation of all injuries that have occurred, or only the fact that there is injury and some damage?
All injuries.
The respondent Why? Says all you have to do is file an affidavit from a doctor who removes gallbladders, who says damaging the bile duct was negligent and that caused injury. You're saying you have to file an affidavit that talks about and that injury caused this damage and that damage and that damage. Does the statute require that?
Yeah, the statute says specifically caused or directly contributed caused the damages claimed in the petition. So whatever you're claiming, it's not just...
Has any case said that you have to prove every item of damage? I mean, maybe you prove some and not others, but where I don't know any case that's... The point is to not have a frivolous lawsuit.
So right, but I'm reading directly from the statute.
I understand it says damages, and if you have someone that says they suffered some damages from the action of the doctor, why isn't that adequate?
Well, because the statute says damages claimed in the petition, and we claim permanent damage in the petition, which if they challenged our affidavit and the court looked at it, and we just had a general surgeon who said, yes, what I can testify to is that the bile, the hepatic duct was injured. That's not enough. That file court should dismiss my case.
I know you're saying you read the statute that way. I'm asking you, is there any case that has read it to require each and every item of damage claim?
I don't think there's been any case that's interpreted that either way.
Okay.
Because, I mean, I assume that you have in your petition a claim for the amount of damages. Is that correct?
The amount?
Yeah. That you're claiming.
The dollar figure?
Yeah.
No. I don't think we're even allowed to.
We have to plead
$25,000.
Over a certain amount.
Though. Yeah, over $25,000.
And so does your affidavit typically then justify where you get to $25,000? I mean, I just don't usually see that in the affidavit.
Typically affidavits don't address the amount of...
But to your argument, that would be part of the damages that would have to be if we read the statute that way.
The damages claim in the petition, so it would have to be over $25,000.
But the affidavits that are submitted don't justify that the damages are over $25,000. They just say that the damages existed here.
Correct.
Is that fair to say?
That's fair to say, Your Honor.
We'll hear from you on rebuttal.
What's that?
We'll hear from you on rebuttal.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
It's okay.
May it please the Court? So since we kind of left off here, or not so much left off on standing, but discussed in great detail the record and the deficiencies in the record, I want to talk about that a little bit to open up here. In this case, as was pleaded in the petition, the plaintiff sued a general surgeon. The general surgeon performed a gallbladder removal. The allegation is that that general surgeon injured a structure that wasn't intended to be injured, wasn't intended to be operated on, and that injury to that structure caused damages. There is nothing in the record to establish that the plaintiff sought the opinion of a general surgeon or any MD or DO who performs gallbladder surgery and could not secure an opinion from somebody in that practice on causation. The record is devoid of any evidence of that. So the court is left to speculate and engage in conjecture over whether or not this impossibility argument is in fact true, and that's an inadequacy in the record in this case.
Without an affidavit that doesn't comply, how is he supposed to do that?
I'm sorry?
Without an affidavit that in fact does not comply, how is he supposed to do that?
So the action can be brought, and there's up to 6 months allowed to file the affidavit. So there was certainly time to create a record that he had secured the report of a physician who could give a general, who could give a negligence opinion but not a causation opinion. There was time to present an affidavit of counsel.
Well, but if he does that, if he waives the work product and attorney client privileges attendant to that, and he does that, and he says, I talked to Dr. X and Dr. Y, you're going to say, well, there's doctors A through Z that you didn't talk to. How is he going to ever establish that there is no doctor who could do that? All he can ever show is that this doctor won't or that one won't.
But that's at least a record establishing that he made the effort and he couldn't find what he wanted.
No, it's going to show that he made an effort, but why wouldn't you then stand up and say, but there you haven't established that it was impossible to get this opinion. You just established this doctor wouldn't give it to you. Seems like he's in a trap he can't get out of, at least not without filing a non-complying affidavit and taking his chances with attorney's fees.
Well, I don't think the statute would require necessarily a non-compliant affidavit. He would then document and make a record of his efforts to find a physician to give the opinion requested and his inability to find one who did so. Sure, I could respond just as easily, but I'm not going to go out and get an opinion to support his case from another doctor.
Well, could he present an opinion of a doctor saying this is not within the expertise of general surgeons or whatever?
I think if that's the problem in finding an affidavit, he could present that report or affidavit.
And what happens if this is that situation, and in fact, and he had that kind of affidavit in this case, is the statute unconstitutional as applied to him?
I would disagree that it's unconstitutional. You mean if he finds if he presents a report?
Mm-hmm. Says, I'm a doctor specializing in the same area as the defendant. I perform these kind of operations. I can tell you this was done negligently. I'm not qualified to talk about the damages that result because that requires a specialty. What if he presented that and the court said, well, you haven't presented the kind of affidavit we need, so you're out of court on appeal. Do we hold that unconstitutional as applied to him because it prevents him from making this case?
Not under the open courts provision, you don't, and because he still has access to the courts.
Well, he doesn't. Not access to the courts doesn't mean so you can get dismissed. It means so you can try your case, if you have a case. So he's saying he has a case, but this precludes him from getting to it by an unrelated barrier to bringing his suit, because the affidavit doesn't relate to the cause of action he is actually pursuing.
If we're speculating as to a situation where it is impossible,
yes,
based on the record, to find the appropriate physician, mm-hmm, that might arguably be unconstitutional. I mean, that's not the case.
Or his LPN situation where the LPN couldn't give a medical causation opinion. So what do you do in that circumstance?
Well, then also we're assuming that a trained physician or a trained healthcare provider cannot give an opinion as to the consequences of failing to meet the standard of care.
Well, he's saying the way it's written, and so maybe you interpret the statute differently, and that could be helpful if you explain,
sure,
that to us, why, that if you had, say, an LPN who had done something negligently, given the wrong medication, that they have no idea what that would cause. All they know is they gave the wrong medication and the person died. You would need a doctor to testify to that damage, wouldn't you? And does the statute allow that? He's saying it does not. Do you disagree?
I don't think you need a doctor under those circumstances under the statute. The qualifications under the statute are a member of the defendant's profession who has practiced the same or substantially the same
specialty.
And
they could testify to the negligence, but can a nurse testify to medical causation?
It depends on the issue. And so we can conjure up potentially an issue where they can't. One issue with a nurse might be a documentation issue. The nurse gave the patient and ordered medication.
My point is you're not arguing today that it's necessarily constitutional in all circumstances. You're just saying it is here?
It is here. And in order to reach the conclusion that it's unconstitutional in some other circumstances, we have to speculate as to both the type of professional, we have to speculate to the type of negligence, and we have to speculate as to what damages are claimed in the petition, because that's what's identified in the statute. I mean, is it possible we could conjure up a scenario where that's a problem? I suppose it's possible. But that's not how we decide constitutional cases in this court. You know, in this court, we decide them on the record before us and whether the party before the court has been aggrieved in a way, you know, by the problem with the statute. That's my attempt to answer your question, if that's it.
Thank you.
Okay. So the elements of an open court cause of action are that the party has a recognized cause of action, the cause of action is being restricted, and the restriction is arbitrary and unreasonable. And one of the things the court is always mindful of and always considers when assessing a provision such as this one is what's the legislature's rationale. And the legislature's rationale, as we all know, is to protect the access of Missourians to affordable health care and quality health care. And that is not being questioned in this case. So then the issue is does this impose an arbitrary or unreasonable restriction on the ability of a plaintiff to bring a medical malpractice lawsuit? And the cases that have decided that there is an open courts violation, the two in the medical malpractice context are the Cardinal Glennon versus Gartner and the Strahler versus St. Luke's. And both of those, the provisions, if they weren't satisfied, essentially made the case dead on arrival upon arrival in the courtroom. In Cardinal Glennon versus Gartner, we had the Professional Liability Review Board, and the court disapproved of the fact that the patient or the plaintiff had to jump through the hoops of going through the review board before filing suit. So suit access to the courts was delayed or denied if that wasn't satisfied. In Strahler versus St. Luke's, you had a minor plaintiff who was barred from seeking a remedy for medical malpractice because the statute limitations was not told pursuant to a statute. Again, that case is effectively dead on arrival in the courtroom because of the statutory mandate or the statutory provision. That's not what we're talking about here. We have a case where the plaintiff has access to the court, took advantage of it two times.
Are those cases you cited in your brief?
Cardinal Glennon versus Gartner, I believe, might have been. And Strahler versus St. Luke's, I don't believe it was, but I can find that citation if necessary. I'm certainly happy to supplement. And even Kilmer, which I think was cited by the parties. Kilmer versus Moon was the dram shop action where the court was, where the statute prohibited a cause of action from proceeding if an outsider, the prosecuting attorney, didn't first take action. And also, if a conviction is required, you have to have a judge allow the case to go to a jury, a criminal case, and you have to have a jury find in favor of the state. So there are these, you know, outside requirements. They are preconditions to suit. That is not the case here. In addition, it's not an arbitrary or unreasonable restriction because all we're asking that, all that the legislature is asking the plaintiff to do is to do what they're going to have to do to present their case to a jury.
But that's what he says they're not. He says you're asking, if that was it, that'd be fine if it said prove, you know, provide an opinion that, you know, you have a case that can go to the jury, you know, use the magic language. That would be one thing. But here it requires you to present an opinion of someone in the same profession and specialty, and that you don't have to do that. Our the breadth of experts to be allowed to testify at trial is much broader than that.
But actually, if you read the statute relevant to the affidavit of merit, it is not as burdensome on the part and on the plaintiff as the expert statute, because the requirements again are same profession and same or substantially the same specialty, and the expert statute. And the way that expert statute is used by the courts and the parties does require a person to demonstrate more than that, that they have training, education.
But it doesn't require the same expert opine on causation and standard of care. You're allowed to bring in multiple experts,
correct,
as many as you need to establish all the elements of your case. The argument is that that the affidavit statute requires a single affidavit from somebody who meets the criteria, but who can also opine on both causation and standard of care.
Right. It requires somebody within the same profession, so if it's a doctor, it's another physician, to give an opinion as to both standard of care and causation.
And specialty, not just
standard. Right, and specialty.
So we're back to the question of whether the fact that there could be a case in which no single doctor meets that criteria, at least with respect to an opinion on both standard of care and causation, then does the statute impose a higher standard than the plaintiff would face at any other point in the proceeding?
But in order to engage in that inquiry, we're talking then about the facial challenge versus the as-applied challenge. In order to make an as-applied challenge, the litigant, the appellant, has to prove that they have been aggrieved by the statute, not that there is some hypothetical litigant that we can conjure up who might not be able to access the courts. And again, that's not this case that we're talking about today. You know, this court also ruled in Mahoney that the affidavit of merit requirement was a reasonable exercise of the legislature's ability to change the framework in which a substantive cause of action is pursued. And nothing about the fact that in Mahoney dismissal was discretionary or permissive versus mandatory dismissal in this case changes the analysis. The consequence of failure to comply is still the same. It's still dismissal at the end of the day. The plaintiffs in the Mahoney case were aggrieved in exactly the same way as the appellant in this case.
Was it a dismissal without prejudice?
Yes, and this was a dismissal without prejudice.
That's not changed.
That has not changed. And so really the only reason that the plaintiff cannot bring her case now isn't the affidavit requirement, but it's the statute of limitations, which has expired. I mean, the injury at issue in this case occurred back in 2013, May of 2013. Treatment was alleged up through, I think, October of 2013 for the complications. So if we start with October 2013 up to March of 2017, that's 3.5 years to find a qualified expert to give an opinion. And in any litigation, a qualified expert is going to need to be found. Granted, it may not need to be the same specialty or the same profession as to all issues.
The case was dismissed on March 17th, is that right?
I believe that's right.
So does the saving statute apply and it could be refiled within a one-year period?
Not in this case, because this was the second dismissal. So the appellant had filed the case, I believe, in 2015, did not file an affidavit, made no record at that time of the inability to secure an affidavit, dismissed without prejudice, then took advantage of the saving statute to refile, and then was dismissed again. At no time was an affidavit offered or any evidence of efforts to make to secure an affidavit offered to the court or put in the record. So, but going back, I mean, appellant's primary argument in the briefing was the open courts provision. There was also reference to trial by jury and to separation of powers, and it's our position that those were not adequately briefed. There were no facts applied to those constitutional provisions in those cases. There's no way to tell what the argument is as to those constitutional provisions. But even so, going back again to Mahoney and the rationale of Mahoney in 1991, that would still apply in this case as well, that there was no violation of the right to trial by jury, and there was no violation of the separation of powers clause. And with that, unless there are further questions, I'm finished. Thank you.
May I please court? The facial challenge versus the as-applied challenge, in that all the cases cited by respondent are criminal cases where the challenges to the constitutionality of a criminal statute applied to a criminal defendant. I have not found any cases where those terms are used at all in an open courts challenge.
A facial challenge, you have to prove that the statute could not be applied in any circumstance and be constitutional. And by the nature of your claim, you're acknowledging that in lots of other claims, it could be applied. It's only in a particular type of claimed causation it couldn't be. So doesn't that defeat a facial challenge?
Well, what I'm arguing, Judge Breckenridge, is that the facial, that analysis is not even applicable to an open courts challenge. And what I'd refer the court to is the Kilmer case, which was cited and discussed by respondent. In Kilmer, that's the dram shop case. And one of the things that the court pointed out and relied on in striking down that statute, which required a county prosecutor to first file information against the bar that sold the alcohol, before you could bring a civil case, is that they spoke of a situation which clearly did not apply to that particular plaintiff, where they said, well, what happens in the situation where the bar is in Illinois or Kansas, it's across state lines, but the person drives across the state line, injures somebody in Missouri, it would be impossible for that person to meet the statute. And they relied on that fact, even though it clearly wasn't the situation in that case. So the analysis here and all the precedent from this court on open courts is not, you don't look at facial versus as applied, you look at, is this, there's three elements. Does this statute restrict your rights to the court, and is it unreasonable or arbitrary? You don't have to address the as applied, you address the statute as a whole.
And then didn't Mahoney address any of those questions that you just posed?
Mahoney only addresses whether or not, in a general sense, the legislature can enact an affidavit requirement.
Can they establish a gatekeeping function, in other
words? Right. And if this statute, or if this statute struck down and the legislature creates a new one where it's tied to what you have to do at trial, I won't be back here. Can't speak for all my colleagues, but I won't challenge that statute. That would be reasonable, and that would be, I see my time is out.
Go ahead and finish.
A statute like that, where it is what you have to do in the beginning is equal to what you have to do at trial, I don't have a problem with that. I think that's fair and constitutional.
Would you agree with me? Kilmer versus Munn had one more component, though, right? It required the prosecutor, which nobody has any control over, who has absolute discretion, even if they could prove the case, to do it. I mean, that's part of it as well.
I agree with
that. Pretty drastically different situation.
And in that case, had the prosecutor filed anything?
I don't believe so.
So they were in fact barred. So they were injured by that.
Right. My point of referring to Kilmer is simply their analysis, and that they didn't
make the traditional as applied versus facial challenge.
Correct. And I don't think any other court has in that context.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Case will be submitted.